Welcome back, folks. That's right. We are at the Julia Street Wharf. You know, Mark, I was thinking for a moment, I can't think of a better way to start this celebration right on the eve of the Memorial Day celebration in memory of all those that have made the ultimate sacrifice and the sacrifice of being in the military. And just want to say thank you to each and every one of the service members. I never served. I always felt a little less than for not having that opportunity, and it's interesting. I always look up to those that have served because it's quite the sacrifice, and we should recognize that. And through this Sail 250 week, if you see a service member and you're down here, thank them.
Very much so, and I give a special thank you to the National World War II Museum, which once again on Memorial Day did a magnificent job of recognizing the fallen and the family members who have served and what they continue to do. And they've been great partners, and we'll be hearing that shortly from our next guest, who, if you talk about somebody who is running at a 24/7 pace to get ready for what's going to happen beginning today, it's this gentleman. He's a retired colonel with the U.S. Marine Corps. Jason Burkett. And Jason, we can't thank you enough for what you've done with putting together the party for the crew members.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It is a tremendous honor to be able to be here with you this morning, and even more so to be able to have the opportunity to welcome our nearly 3,000 service members that are coming into our community. This is just going to be a tremendous experience. As I tell many of our partners that have come together in the community of partners to provide this support, that this really is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime Fleet Week experience because of the confluence of a traditional Fleet Week and the Sail 250.
Yeah, and you are Executive Director of USO Louisiana Mississippi, and you've been in this post since January of 2025. What is the USO? Give our listening audience an idea of what the USO has done in the past, but what's happening now with the organization?
Certainly. So I'll start by saying no good deed goes unpunished. My area of operation now is Louisiana, Mississippi, Florida, and the southern
added
half
to
of
your,
Alabama.
Okay.
Sounds like he was a victim.
Because you're successful,
success.
That's why.
And perhaps. Nonetheless.
Or you missed the meeting.
That may be it. That may be as well. So following my retirement from the Marine Corps 2 years ago, I wanted to find an opportunity where I could continue to support our nation's war fighters and their families. And in the USO, throughout my 25 years in the Marine Corps, had multiple touch points of just tremendous impact. Their focus really is on enabling and maintaining the morale of our service members, wherever they may be, and keeping them connected with their families. One particular pillar of our skill sets and programs we provide that I love to talk about is our reading program, where if I was deployed in the Middle East right now, I could go in a tent that the USO has and sit in a small portion of it and get videotaped recording a story to my kids. And that story would be beamed back home to my family. And because of our relationship with Amazon, they'll overnight a copy of that book to my kids. So that night, my kids could be sitting in bed watching Dad read from somewhere in the Middle East. And that's just one of 13 different programs this organization puts on. We had 11.7 million touch points with service members just last year alone. On every continent, we have 250 centers around the globe. We're on every aircraft carrier. We're getting on destroyers. Anywhere our service members go, the USO is.
And this is not a support directly from Congress or an allocation from the government, right? This is all put together because people are contributing, and you've got sponsors, and people are willing to give of their hard-earned income to help you.
So I love that question, Mark, and thank you for asking. We're a bit of a hybrid construct. We have a congressional charter, which came as a result of our presidential mandate to be stood up back in conjunction with World War II. So that congressional charter gives us access to the military anywhere they go. We also get a small stipend from the government, about $23 million a year, which is less than 9% of our operating budget per year. So to your point, absolutely, over 90% of all of our resources come primarily from individual citizens that want to make a difference and connect with their military, but also with our business corporate partners as well. As we'll see over the course of these next 5 days and all the events that we're putting on, it's enabled by our community partners here in this region, our community partners nationally, and our volunteers from the community.
Jason, as you were telling that story of the touch points, right? Mm-hmm. I was preparing for an interview about what's going on in the Middle East, and there were several deployments of several ships that had extended by a long period of time that what was thought to be the expected deployment.
Sure.
I can't imagine how important these services that you just described are for those individuals.
Yeah.
Through those kids, those moms, those dads expected their loved ones to be back 3 months earlier, and they're still not home.
Absolutely. It goes to the foundation of where this organization came from. So in 1941, the president realized at the dawn of World War II for this nation that this was going to be a long fight, and we were going to have those long times away from home. We needed to combine a multitude of service entities and build a synergy across them to maintain the morale, keep the connections with family, keep the connections with home, so that we could keep that fighting force in the fight. Same today, as you mentioned, that's the beauty of us having USO centers on all of our aircraft carriers today. We're expanding to our destroyers today. Any combat zone where we have troops, you have a USO forward with them to provide that connection and support. And then back here stateside, we have those same touch points for service members. So major bases, airports, I'm sure everyone has seen a USO center in an airport. Those touch points are all over the globe.
Very good. And I remember growing up watching the USO shows, some very talented individuals would be broadcast. That'd be over, whether it was Vietnam or...
Bob Hope.
That's right.
That's right.
And the National World War II Museum does some work around that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what a lot of people's touch point is you say Bob Hope, and they're like, oh, okay, I get it.
I understand that.
But
yeah.
We are working on getting more brand awareness and more connection with our community, and that's one of the beautiful aspects of our engagements with this Fleet Week.
Yeah.
And actually, conveniently, Mark, you mentioned the World War II Museum. We have the USO CEO coming into town this afternoon, and he is meeting with the CEO of the World War II Museum on Friday to find more bridges.
Very
because
good.
We were born from World War II.
Well, speaking of the week... Lay out what you have put together for the crew members from not only the United States Navy and the U.S. Coast Guard, but also the foreign flag tall ship crew members.
Absolutely. Everything that we're putting on this week is fair shared across all of our honored guests. And from the moment they step ashore this afternoon, as they step on the pier at approximately 4 o'clock, we're going to embrace them with what we like to call the Big New Orleans hug. So they're going to step ashore. They're going to be greeted by the Daughters of the American Revolution, the Saints Cheer Crew, a number of other ambassadors, Miss Louisiana, about 40 of our festival queens from all over the state, embraced by those cultural ambassadors while also under the umbrella of jazz music being played. We're going to have the victory bells from the World War II Museum. And, of course, there's nothing like food in this area, so we're going to have a whole hog, 2 whole gators, 2 lambs, Acme oyster serving char-grilled oyster, and the Cajun Navy serving jambalaya. It's all those cultural...
I know what party I'm crashing.
Can we extend the show, Newell?
Yes, yes, please do.
Yeah, what a great welcome. We were just talking about the size of the Kearsarge itself, over 800 feet long, and to see that then dock and have those crew members and other crew members come and be welcomed this way is very special.
Exactly. So we're expecting about 1,500 people at that event. Then tomorrow we're taking the junior enlisted troops out to Jean Lafitte because we want to get them a cultural experience that just isn't the French Quarter. Although I love the French Quarter, we're going to get them out on airboats.
Oh, don't worry. They'll make it to the French Quarter at some point.
No, I'm certain. Yeah. I am certain. But tomorrow we're taking 300 of them down to Jean Lafitte.
That's
so they
great.
Can get that experience. Friday night we have a comedy night at the Howlin' Wolf where we're going to get 450 of our troops in there and give them a great experience. Saturday night, because of the love from the World War II Museum, we're going to have a headliner concert, which is going to have about 750 attendees. And then when that caps off, I know that they're going to take in the beautiful fireworks that your team has put together for them.
Yeah, 9 o'clock that night. That's right. And it's interesting because not all crew members are off the vessels at all times, right?
No.
Talk about that shift opportunity that happens on ships.
I love it. And I love the way you're pulling right in the direction I'd like to go because the ship rotations.
Well, you and I have worked along
alongside
each other for several months, so I think we know how each other thinks.
That's fair, Mark. And it has been an honor and a pleasure. So the ships at any given time have approximately one-third that get to go out and do liberty, do whatever they want. One-third will be pulling security and other details, and then one-third they're just sleeping. So it's a rotational thing. So what we are doing in addition to those events that I just mentioned is every day from 8 in the morning till 8 at night, we're having a support center here in the Julia Street Terminal that will be open, providing food, reprieve, connections, drinks, and daily activations. And let me tell you that just two of the daily activations, because there's one every day. On Saturday, we have what we're calling paws and dogs. So we have service animals coming out. We have working dogs coming out. And then we also have lucky dogs coming in to do chili dogs. So the service members will get to get that combination of experience. So that, again, put on by our community partners.
That's great.
Another day we're doing a Mardi Gras day on Sunday, which Mardi Gras World has been a great partner with. So we're going to build masks and get cultural immersion and get king cakes and that experience too. And we're doing one of those types of events every day for those sailors who may not have time to get out in the community because of that shift work. So right here next to their ship, they can walk into the center and get support. And our center will provide overnight support as well for all those working the night shifts. We'll provide sandwiches, coffee, support 24/7.
That's beautiful. And then Sunday, our final day in New Orleans, there's a lot going on. I know the Audubon Nature Institute through the zoo is extending a family day experience for members of the military and their families at the Audubon Zoo. But tell us about what's happening at the Fly.
Absolutely. So that initiative really is been carried by the Herculean efforts of the Audubon Institute coupled with the Carrollton Boosters.
And Will Hales.
Will Hales in particular.
Let's give Will a shout out. He has done great work in pulling this together with who you just mentioned.
He certainly has. He has been the Hercules of the Herculean effort. And so there's going to be, I think last count I heard was 8 or 9 different teams, international and U.S., competing in a round-robin soccer tournament. Great competition, great camaraderie. There'll be food, there'll be community engagements in with it. It's just going to be a great event that morning, and then bleeding into the event that afternoon at the zoo.
Yeah, you know, we have to get with Peyton Malone to make sure that we get some good weather right?
Well, we have a lot of opportunity for this to improve, right?
Well, now and then. It looks good right now.
It looks perfect. This is a great day to come out and see, you know.
Now, yesterday also turned out to be okay. We had a couple of, we had a ship come in yesterday. But again, to Jason's point, this is going to be probably for many of the crew members, the first time they're in New Orleans. And so what you're doing is giving them the taste that they need to have.
And that's exactly what we shared with the governor's office as well. This, now I like to call it the Big New Orleans Hug, but they've asked me to broaden it and say, Jason, it's a Big Louisiana Hug, so I'll pivot, of course. But that's exactly what's bringing the lieutenant governor out and his staff out for this event. For that big hug at the very beginning, because the vast majority of these young men and women have never been to New Orleans, and this will be the experience they take away.
Right.
And we really hope they leave our community with a story of a community that embraced them.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that there's a young sailor on the Trent named Ian, first time ever in the United States, and the first city ever is New Orleans. And so I'm sure he's going to experience it in a good way because of you. How can people get involved with the USO? What can they do?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, we are a volunteer-driven organization. We are a community partner-driven organization. So if they're interested in getting involved, they can certainly reach out to my team. All they have to do is Google USO Louisiana, and we'll pop up. There's a multitude of ways to get involved. Either, like I guess, volunteering or financially supporting you or in kind.
In fact, most of the folks with the USO are volunteers, right?
Absolutely. We have over 70,000 volunteers. We only have a few hundred full-time employees like myself, because we want over 90% of every dollar that's donated to the USO to go to those service members, not to paychecks and other overhead.
Right, right. Absolutely incredible organization. You know, we all know that it's been around for a long, long time. I don't know that I've ever learned as much as I've today as to what it is that y'all do and the breadth and depth of the services that you offer.
Yeah.
I mean, just the book, it brought a tug to my heart, just the book reading program with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean? Kids and dogs, they'll get you every time. We have service animal projects and programs, which is the same. It's all about supporting the human element, because it's easy to get lost in any conflict, in any event. That's a young man or woman that's in there, and it's their family.
And look,
too.
When we say young, I mean, we're talking about very young.
Yeah, you're talking someone who's 18 on average, 18 to 25, 26.
Yeah.
And that's just the way we're built.
Jason, let's talk about you for a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You became a Marine in 2000, and you've served valiantly. Tell us some of the deployments that you've been involved in.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I came into the Marine Corps in January of 2000, before the world turned upside down with 9/11. I'm an infantry officer by background, so you can kind of write the narrative. Multiple combat deployments, all to Iraq. So it was a very growth-oriented experience, mm-hmm. But also got to meet some of the finest patriots that you can imagine.
And you attended the War College?
I did. I was fortunate enough through my 25 years in the Marine Corps to both attend the Marine Corps Command and Staff College to get a master's there, and then the Army's War College to get a secondary master's.
Excellent. I know you have a family, and they've been very supportive of your efforts.
Oh, goodness, have they ever. So,
he married a local girl.
I did. So I was going to say.
He wasn't going to disappear from here.
That's
for very
right.
Long.
That's what usually happens, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Born and raised in a farm in Ohio, and met my beautiful bride, and about 11 months later was married, and always promised her when we retired, this would be where we retired to. So here we are.
Can't leave New Orleans now, kiddo.
No. And it's a blessing. It is hard not to love this community.
But they're going to be adding states to your responsibility. I can just tell based on all the work that
you're
doing.
Might be missing another meeting while he's with us.
Perhaps. But New Orleans is going to be like our crown jewel. That's why they chose me for this job, because we haven't historically had a USO presence here. We opened our first USO center actually at Fort Polk in March. And we're looking to build out in the New Orleans area now. So that's our focus.
Well, General Anderson was bragging on you before, so you got a fan there.
I am blessed.
But thank you for what you're doing. Our team has enjoyed working with you, and I know you sit on the military committee that meets regularly at the National World War II Museum, and to the man and woman sitting on that committee, they love you.
Well, it's a blessing. We are a collaborative
bunch. Your enthusiasm and your focus and your drive that is infectious.
Oh, it's God's love. That's what's infectious.
That's good. That's good.
Thank you so much. We truly appreciate it. Jason Burkett, Area Director, United... Jesus. USO.
United Services Organization.
I finally got it out. Thank you so much. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back. Well, Mark, that was an interesting conversation with Jason.
Yeah.
I love having these learning opportunities when we hear so much about what these organizations are doing and providing.
The work that they're doing here, particularly with setting up that warm hospitality for the crew members, is inspiring, and they're going to have a blast with it, and we can't thank them enough.
I wonder what the reaction is going to be of the foreign sailors that are in.
Yeah, because many of them, I would say... The vast majority have never been to New Orleans, let alone the United States.
They've never been exposed to
our hospitality, our
culture.
So everything's going to be compared now to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Everywhere they go now, they go to Des Moines or they go to Charleston or Miami, they're going to go, whoa, wait, what about New Orleans?
They step off the vessel to the Louisiana hug. Human nature is the first impression, the last impression.
That's right.
And
they, from here, they go to Norfolk, then they go to Baltimore, then New York, and finally in Boston. So everything's going to be compared to what they experience here.
No doubt. We are now joined by Dr. Jeffrey Kuo, an emergency medical doctor at Ochsner, and he's the official medical provider for SAIL 250 New Orleans. I had the opportunity to interview you, doctor, about a week or so ago for EMS Appreciation Week, and we really appreciate the work that our EMS folks do, and obviously our emergency room physicians as well, working in tandem and together with one another, providing some of the most excellent medical service there is around the world. That first touch could be the saving touch, the lasting touch on so many different fronts, right?
Newell, thank you for saying that. It's such an honor to be able to provide healthcare for folks in general, within an honorable profession like healthcare. But to be recognized for it by folks like you really does mean quite a bit. And, at Ochsner Health, we try our best to provide exceptional health care to heal and as part of our mission. But beyond that, the obvious mission piece of this is yet further aspects of it, which include things like serving. And that's why we're so excited to be a part of this this great event called Sail 250.
Yeah, and I got to say, from the very beginning, working with David Mueller and the team at Auctioner Health, y'all were one of the first to step up as a major sponsor of Sail 250 New Orleans. And so we can't thank you enough for what you're providing. And the visitors that are be coming down to the riverfront, especially Goldering, Waldenburg, Riverfront Park, they'll see y'all there. You're going to be taking care of any needs that come up. And we're not expecting any, but, you know, with hopefully if we get some good weather, as we expect this weekend, people need to be concerned about taking care of themselves, correct? What should they be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. The weather is such a big part of this, right? I mean, if the weather is cool and it's not humid and it's overcast, we don't expect a lot of issues, right? There are going to be a considerable number of patrons attending the event, which we're really, really excited about, as a city here in New Orleans, to be able to showcase what we're able to offer to the folks that are coming in from out of town in particular. It's super exciting. That said, if the sun is out and the humidity is high and the temperature is high, unfortunately, we do expect quite a few people to have heat-related illnesses and such, and that is why Auctioner Health is here to help provide health care in collaboration with New Orleans EMS here at Sail 250.
Yeah, tell us about the setup. What will you be having out here?
Yeah, in the field, New Orleans EMS is going to be a great partner to us, and they are going to have paramedics in the field that are going to be able to respond to calls. And when there are medical care needs associated with the calls, they will bring the patients to us within the Auctioner Health tents. There are going to be a couple of them situated in the grounds, where we will have physicians and APPs, nurses, paramedics, LPNs, respiratory therapists, so on and so forth, that are going to be staffing the medical tents and providing health care to the folks that need it.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It really is an honor.
And Doc, while we're on this topic about heat-related conditions, a lot of people are confused that any type of fluid hydrates you. So let's set the record straight here and now. That is not the case.
As much as I would love to tell everyone to partake as they choose, we do have to be careful.
We'll let you be the grim reaper. Give them the bad news.
By no means am I one to tell folks to 100% avoid partaking in libations. However, what I will say is you do have to maintain hydration, and alcohol does actually act as a diuretic, which means that you can actually cause yourself further dehydration if you're consuming too much alcohol. So what I usually tell my...
Same with coffee, right?
Exactly, because of the caffeine. That's exactly right, Noel. And so what I tell people is, you know, moderation is key. And beyond that, also making sure that you remain hydrated by drinking fluids that are rich in electrolytes and not rich in alcohol in between your alcoholic beverages.
Yeah. One of those, one of these.
That's right.
That's a good rule of thumb.
And a mixture of them doesn't count, right? So if you have the alcohol on top of the Powerade, that's not a substitute.
And right? To the point that we have tall ships that will be at Goldring Waldenburg Riverfront Park, the visitors will queue in line to enter the ships as they wish to tour. So they can expect, I think, lines of considerable time. And so you're going to be out in the element for a while. So just be prepared. And
absolutely.
Thank you all for doing that.
Yeah. So, in fact, standing out in the sun in the queues can be one of the times in which folks do need to recognize that they need to protect themselves from the elements.
Yeah.
Right. And so make sure that you're wearing sunscreen, for instance. Make sure that you are covering yourself with a large hat, perhaps, to avoid the sun. And then again, make sure that you're hydrated so that you can avoid the dehydration that typically ensues when you're in the sun, in the heat and humidity.
You know, that's a good point. I think it would be smart for everyone to wear a hat.
Oh, absolutely.
Down there.
I mean,
yeah.
beyond just the protection from the sun and to avoid sunburn, it also does actually help you from getting too dehydrated.
Yeah, very good.
A lot of folks, I've heard this several times about kind of standing up, erect, locking your knees out. If you start to dehydrate, that's not actually a good thing to do. You want to kind of bend the legs, keep moving a little bit, right?
Noel, that's a fantastic point. As we start to get dehydrated, the overall volume within our blood system decreases. And with gravity pulling down on your blood, you start to decrease the amount of what we call venous return, getting back to your heart so that your heart can continue to pump and bring blood to areas of your body like your brain. And so because of that, folks start to pass out when they get dehydrated and overheated. And so one of the ways to avoid that, obviously maintain hydration, but beyond that, if you start to feel lightheaded, dizzy, weak, bend your knees more, right? And even stoop down. But during the times where you're standing in queue, it is best for you to continue to flex your muscles in your legs to help promote return of blood flow.
Yeah.
Very good point. Oxygen Health has done many major events, and you've had experience with Super Bowls and other major events. Talk to us about the importance of what the partnerships that y'all have been able to create over the years.
Mark, as I mentioned, you know, part of our mission is to serve. And one of the most exciting ways for us to do that at Oxygen Health is to partner with amazing entities and organizations like Sail 250 and to provide health care for the patrons that are coming. Historically, we've done that through events such as the Super Bowl and NBA All-Star Games. And then one of the most rewarding in my professional career was actually the Congressional Medal of Honor Society convention. You know, at Oxygen Health, we are really excited about partnering with our law enforcement, with our EMS, but beyond that, also our military folk. And to be able to do that and to celebrate our nation and 250 years of our nation is just such a tremendous and rewarding opportunity.
Well, thank you for that. Interesting in your bio that you served on field airway management and emergency response physician for the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, this is my...
Tell us about that.
I have now been the airway physician for the Saints for 17 seasons. And it's, again, one of those really, really rewarding opportunities that Oxygen Health has been able to provide to me on a personal level, professionally. I'm there, you know, to provide emergency care for the players on both sidelines, in fact, when called upon to do so for emergent situations. You may recall a few years back with the Buffalo Bills, there was a gentleman by the name of DeMar Hamlin. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
That's actually what our ER physicians that are on the sidelines for the games are called to do when necessary, is to provide that emergency care and ultimately save lives for the players and such that are there.
Very good. Thank you. That was a great explanation. I wasn't sure what the airway management term meant.
Yeah, so in fact, airway in particular is placing a definitive airway. Normally, that would be a plastic tube into the throat to help breathe for a patient that's not breathing on their own.
Very good.
You know, I was kind of curious when you talk about that. I don't ever remember a player having a stroke.
Yes, yeah, so...
Because that's a very time-sensitive response thing, too, right?
It absolutely is. Now, that said, strokes normally occur in folks who have significant comorbidities or right. Other health problems, just such as high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, family history, smokers, things of that nature. So the overwhelming majority of the time, our players are young and healthy, and right. They're not going to be at risk for the type of strokes that we commonly consider the quote-unquote stroke. However, as with any violent or sport in which people are hitting one another, striking one another with high force, you know, there are times where you run the risk of head injuries. And the other type of stroke that we talk about at times is the ones where you are bleeding into the brain.
Into the brain, right.
And, you know, there are obviously situations where the players are placing themselves at risk in that sense, which is why we do such a diligent job of head protection and concussion protocols within the NFL so that we can protect the players.
I'm going to ask this question from a medical perspective. I remember I've traveled with the Saints many times, and I remember the first time that I was on the sideline. And what you see on TV and what you experience live on the sideline when Darren Sproles is running at you at like 150 miles an hour and you're trying to get out of his way. What was your reaction to the physicalness of that game when you saw it as a physician?
You know, it's really funny you bring Darren Sproles up. My son Skyler and I were actually talking about him yesterday because my son asked, how fast was he? And what I was actually talking about was just how fast the players in general are in the NFL and how violently they can hit each other and how tough they are. And in fact, folks talk about the exorbitant amount of money that those players are making. I am a firm believer that they deserve every cent of what they make because of the damage that they're potentially putting themselves through from a physical perspective and a mental perspective. To answer your question directly, Newell, I will say that the first time I had an opportunity to stand on the sidelines of an NFL football game, I could not believe just how big, how fast, and how strong these guys were. And it's still 17 seasons later, it's still at times shakes me a little when there's a really, really big hit, just simply because from a medical standpoint, I'm watching the game from a different perspective than the fans may be.
Yeah. Kind of always kind of curious about, you know, what a physician saw out on the field. It was a frightening moment when Sproles was running right out. I remember it like it was yesterday, and I'm trying to figure out how the hell to get out of his way.
We'd never want to get hit on the sidelines. No. And in 17 years, I have been very fortunate that I've been just quick enough to get out of the way of those guys.
Of course, you're in the safety of the press box.
Well, I'm in the third level looking down, and fortunately, I don't want to get in the way of anybody.
And I hear your voice booming every game.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Doc. We truly appreciate all that you do personally, but all the organization as well, Ochsner Health Systems, and what they do for as being a great corporate partner for so many different events here in the city. And we don't realize just how fortunate we truly are.
Yeah, thanks for stepping up to the plate.
On behalf of Ochsner, I say thank you guys for doing this, because it genuinely means a lot for us to be able to speak about how we are providing such exceptional health care to our community.
Great, and we'll see you at Wildenburg Park in a couple of hours.
Excited to see you.
Thank you, Jeff.
All righty. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. That was Dr. Jeffrey Kuo, emergency medical doctor at Ochsner NOLA and the provider for Sale 250 New Orleans. And we'll be right back with Mark Romick, myself, and we will be visiting with a number of other folks when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Mark, you know, there's a couple of really strong connections that obviously New Orleans has as a port city to the maritime industry. You know, the Battle of New Orleans, the role that we played in the American Revolution, also Higgins during World War II. There were a number of different shows that I got to watch over the weekend and, you know, on Memorial Day. And You find out that the city of New Orleans comes up frequently.
All the time. And in fact, Walt and the team with Kim Priez last week were at IPW, which is the global trade event for the travel industry, and it's coming here next year. And to the person in Fort Lauderdale where it was being held, was saying, we cannot wait to come back to New Orleans, because New Orleans really becomes the cultural crossroads of this part of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's demonstrated for centuries with our port being the reason why we're here is because of the Mississippi River and the city being a little bit older than the United States of America, playing a pivotal role in the history of our nation.
And being under a number of flags, right?
Yes. I think, you've obviously the Spanish, the French,
the Portuguese, the
American, of course, and you see that in everything that we do, plus the Haitian influence, the African influence. It's been discussed as New Orleans as the gumbo of the world, and I think this is what we want to show the crew members when they come to the city over the next several days.
And the French Quarter itself, as the gem, presents itself in a manner that is more European than I don't know of any other area in the city. I mean, I'm not the most traveled individual, but it's hard for me to think of another place.
Yeah, they say sometimes it's like going to Europe without having to leave New Orleans or leave the country. And I think what you get there is the representation of how this is truly a global city.
Yeah. And it's just been kind of interesting as all of this has culminated here with the Sail 250 operation. And I'm sure that all contributed to why we were chosen. Right?
I think the fact that we have done this successfully several times before, New Orleans is recognized as a city that is truly built to host, and we can do this, and we've done it, and we'll do it again. And I think this is not the last time you'll see tall ships from around the world visit the great port of New Orleans.
Absolutely. All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. We are back, and I stand corrected. It's not the first time, and it won't be the last.
People are listening. I love it.
I don't know where I got this Portuguese thing from, but we were never under a Portuguese flag.
I think it's
Save me.
It's the Emeril Lagasse influence.
There's the life ring. I'll take it.
Emeril Lagasse influence.
I love it. And he's been a big influence.
Big influence in this area. And his son, EJ, even a bigger influence.
Absolutely.
Yeah, really terrific.
Can't wait to get back to that restaurant, quite frankly. Had a meal of a lifetime.
I think this week you're going to see New Orleans' definition come alive as a city defined by hospitality, culture, and a deep appreciation for our visitors. If there's a way for us to demonstrate that, this is going to be the way to do it.
Yep.
Because we are built to host.
And we admit when we make a mistake. I'm still racking my brain. There's something that...
It was Emeril Lagasse.
There's something about the Portuguese in New Orleans. I love my Louisiana history.
The Portuguese.
Yeah,
they really are.
They are. I can't wait to get to Portugal.
In fact, I'm going there this summer.
You are. I'm jealous.
I'll tell them that you were bragging on them.
All right, folks. We're going to get to the top of the hour news break. And when we return, we are going to visit with the chairman of the board of the DOC board, Michael Thomas. He's been a good friend for a long time. We'll visit with him about the role that they're playing in Sail 250. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Newell and Mark Romig on WWL.